This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Back on the Diehards for Hour 2. It's Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky. We apologize. We lost you there for about 15 minutes. Some power
issues.
We
appreciate that you're back.
Yes, we appreciate you sticking with us. Some power issues in Houston. Big storm rolling through. And we hope everybody back there stays safe. We were talking basketball, Bobby. I want to get back to basketball, but there are two things I want to touch on. First, U.S. Open this weekend. Awesome, awesome finish from Jon Rahm. Love it when athletes show emotion. He was fired up. That was great. So was the guy who ran on the course on 13. Hit a beautiful,
lived out a dream.
Beautiful iron shot. Great form on that one.
Yeah, and he played a little basketball with the security guard. So that guy had himself a quality Sunday. And then DeChambeau choked. He had a lead for a little bit, had a couple bogeys, had a double bogey. So Torrey Pines, it really gave you everything once again.
And then the other thing I want to touch on right now in the College World Series, Jack Leiter going
dealing.
Up against. Yeah, he is absolutely dealing. It is 1-0 in the eighth. He just got out of a bases-loaded jam, so I don't know how much more he'll pitch. I saw this, though. Pitch 106. 106, Bobby. 101 miles an hour.
Ooh, he had 12 Ks through six innings.
He's 14 through seven.
Putting on a show.
This is a guy in you know, it's kind of time to talk MLB draft. We're actually, exactly a month out. Month and a day, maybe. It's late this year. I know it's late July. July 11th. 11, so less than a month out. Definitely time to talk about it.
Well, and I assume you've heard the reports about where Jack Leiter wants to end up.
I haven't seen that.
He is trying to muscle his way to the Red Sox,
well,
reportedly.
He is pitching his way out of Boston
well,
right
he's
now
telling
with this performance.
These teams that my price is going to be too high for you to sign me.
I love it.
Boston.
I'm a Kumar Rocker guy, but I would take him all day. All right, we'll get back into another Boston team on the other side. The Celtics are falling apart. We'll pick the bones of that season. Keep it here. You're listening to Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
So quickly back into college baseball here. It's Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Pep tonight. It is 1-0 NC State.
He gave up a home run.
He gave up a home run earlier in the fifth, but, you know, and Leiter, by the way, gave up a home run, but seven innings, three hits, one earned run, one walk, 14 strikeouts. With this lineup, that should be more than enough. This is on the lineup, you know. But I will say, so this happened in the Super Regionals, right? There was a great game between Vanderbilt and ECU. Kumar Rocker pitched. He dealt 7 2/3, three hits, 11 strikeouts. But the guy on the other side, Gavin Williams, 7 1/3, two runs, 13 strikeouts. He was excellent, and he is now projected. He was supposed to be around 2-4 pick. That outing, and you have so many scouts watching because it's Vanderbilt, he's now projected to be a late first-round pick. So, okay, it's 1-0 against a very good Vanderbilt lineup. I went and I saw it. Just got pulled. Sam Highfill from NC State. 7 1/3 is against the best lineup in the country. The best lineup left. Arkansas had the best lineup. Best lineup left. Top five lineup in the country. Multiple first-round picks. 7 1/3. Two hits. Two walks. Seven strikeouts for Sam Highfill. And hopefully the scouts are watching him as well.
Yeah, and so what's interesting is that, for example, in college basketball, if you have a great March Madness, there's still more emphasis on your total body of work. So to fans, you catch the eye. To owners, you catch an eye, which can be influential. But it's still, well, we've seen all this guy's shortcomings in the regular season in the conference tournament. So we're not that interested. This is a different story. The MLB draft is one, especially because there are so many rounds, that if you have a great postseason performance, well, especially against a fantastic lineup like Vanderbilt's, you can jump exponentially.
Well, so this is new, because the draft used to be right before the College World Series started. It was all based on the conference tournaments. Now it's been pushed back, and so, for instance, the draft would have already happened when Highfill had this performance. He's not in the draft this year. Freshman out of Apex, North Carolina. He had a 3-something ERA this year. I just had it in front of me. 3.66 ERA this year. So a guy who's still going to have another year to build on this. But, you know, somebody who, when we start talking about the draft next year, look out. Look out. This kid clearly knows what he's doing. And he's actually, I'm seeing now, he pitched against Arkansas as well, who I mentioned was the best lineup in the country. 6 1/3, 2 hits, 3 earned runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. That's pretty good against Arkansas. So we're getting some really good looks at out of this kid, and it's been awesome. Awesome stuff happening in Omaha. Make sure you go and check that out. See, I always do this. No, we have time in this segment left. Let's get into the Boston Celtics. Danny Ainge speaks today, and you know, he talks about the trade. I love Kemba Walker, all of that. The reason he's saying that is there's an article put out by Jared Weiss, The Athletic, and I know Jared's not going to embellish. Jared's not going to make things up. Jared is you know, straight down the line as they come, okay? And he says that part of the reason Kemba wanted out, he was mad Danny Ainge tried to trade him. He didn't like dealing with Brad Stevens. He didn't have a bad relationship with Stevens, but he didn't like having him as boss. Stevens is now upstairs. Ainge is gone. What's the real reason Kemba Walker wanted to leave, and should Celtics fans be worried about their two young superstars maybe getting a wandering eye?
Well, that was, Jared did a fantastic job with the details he put into that report. Obviously, he didn't sit there over the weekend and just come up with them off the top of his head. And one of the interesting nuggets that he gave us is that when Gordon Hayward left, he told Brad Stevens, I think you need to be more stern with these guys and hold them more accountable. And the guy who it seems like he took that out on the most was Kemba Walker.
Is it possible that it's not that he needed to be harder on the rest of the team? He was just super easy on Gordon Hayward because that was his guy.
Well, so
that was his buddy for Butler. That's how I read that.
That could still be where Hayward was coming from, referring to how he handled his situation. Also, I think it's pretty ridiculous if the players were as upset as some reports were that he was starting the year after he came back from his traumatic knee injury, that upset guys and that it lingered as an issue even when he was then moved to the bench. So if that's as accurate as some of those reports were, and I actually questioned that, because it seems like that was amplified a bit. But if that's true, that's on the players, and there should be someone there. Maybe it's not for Brad Stevens to do, but someone should have been telling them, you got to suck it up and move on and grow up from this. And so now perhaps Hayward, seeing how his situation impacted the rest of the locker room, tells Brad, you need to be firm. And unfortunately, no one he could have picked is going to handle that well. And so Kemba, with all those issues with the injuries and not living up to the contract and a new and lesser role than he's ever had in his life, it all just compounded itself.
So I guess what I'm saying is, what if he was already hard enough on those guys? What if Gordon Hayward had a specific experience to Gordon Hayward that he assumed the rest of his team was getting that they weren't? So he tells Brad, based on how you treat me, you need to be stricter, not knowing he's getting special treatment because he's Gordon Hayward, the Butler, Indiana Golden Boy. And then Brad, who was already strict enough, turns around to the rest of the roster and decides he's going to be bad Brad, right? Like, that's what I think happened here. And I do think Kemba got the brunt of it. And Brad is supposedly the point guard whisperer. We saw him do it with Isaiah Thomas. We saw him do it with Terry Rozier. It would make sense. He would put more on his point guards and Walker would get the focus. But I think this goes back, not necessarily to things that changed this year, but him favoring Gordon Hayward in the past.
Yeah, I really do believe that Brad was equipped to handle these situations, but once the Kyrie season happened, obviously his second one in Boston, then Brad tried to reacclimate and handle certain things, and it didn't go well. And now it's one where you're so far behind that it feels like you can't make a right decision. That's what I think. I think that Brad Stevens, leading up to that point, was just being Brad Stevens, so you can react organically to any situation that comes your way. And then he missed a curveball, and from there, it felt like every pitch, he didn't even see it come across the plate.
So, again, you know, to kind of circle back, he's upstairs now. He's not a part of the day-to-day, and Kemba still didn't want to be here. Is it maybe worse than what Jared knows? Is it, you know, is there a problem with Brad Stevens just being in the building?
No, and on the Kemba front, I think he was willing to stay, but I think that it pissed him off that Danny was shopping him, right or wrong on Ainge's part.
Wrong.
And I think it depends.
Wrong. You just signed the guy. He blows out his knee for you.
If they
did the same thing with Isaiah Thomas.
Traded Kemba,
I'm not
and
saying,
gone further in the playoffs, would you be saying wrong?
I am not saying that it's wrong in the sense that it was a bad basketball move.
It's a terrible PR
term.
Move.
It makes you a
should
but,
that be
but
prioritized?
That is a, but that is a PR league, and you're seeing players now having problems with the franchise, not wanting to come to Boston, even though Danny is gone. And this is exactly what I'm saying. Danny is not in the building, but he set that precedent so bad that Kemba still wants to leave. That's why it was a bad move, because and say what you will about athletes being loyal in that league or not, and guys signing contracts and instantly demanding trades, they're expecting loyalty from the teams. Danny showed no loyalty.
No. These players are way too smart for that. They realize that it's almost like two separate businesses where there's them and there's the team and they can trade you at any time. And now we're in the player empowerment era dating back to when LeBron took his talents to South Beach. And these guys can walk in and say, it's been a good run. It's time to trade me. And so they're well aware of what's going on. I think there was a wait and see with Brad Stevens. And because the Kemba situation wasn't new, that the jury's still out on how Brad Stevens is going to operate as president of basketball operations.
I just think there's reason to be worried. Again, and oh, like yeah. you said, the player empowerment era, right? I'm not necessarily saying that they're caught off guard, but here's the players being slighted. They are going to use that to their advantage. How does Kemba use that to his advantage? He knows that he's probably not going to have an ideal role in Boston. He points to that as a way to want out. Danny Ainge should not have done that. He hurt the team in the long term when he traded Isaiah Thomas in the way he did. And by the way, we still don't totally know what the communication was between the team and Isaiah Thomas about his hip injury. Thomas has said he was not fully informed. Ainge has said that's not true. I'm presenting both sides, but it is interesting that Thomas would say that, because I don't think it's something you would just say.
And I'll say this. The goal of the team's training staff is not to get players to be 100% healthy. It's to get them on the court. And so factor that in when you weigh out what Danny Ainge said about the matter and Isaiah Thomas, because the issue to me was not trading Isaiah in a deal that every general manager in the NBA would have made, but the issue was how they handled his injury.
Right, and then just shipping him out. So, but again, the way that was viewed by players, the way this Kemba situation has been viewed by players, it's hurting the team's image when it comes to free agency. Right, so we're talking about this a little bit off the air, and I know we're up against it here, so last point. The only way the Celtics are going to get a player, the kind of player they need, a top-tier player, is not just for that player to demand a trade. Let's say Bradley Beal. It's a hypothetical because he's been floated. He's buddies with Tatum. They're in the Olympics. The Celtics can't just go out and trade for Bradley Beal, even if he wants out of Washington. They can't outbid other teams. What would have to happen is Bradley Beal has to say, I want out, and I want to go to Boston. I don't want to go anywhere else. What James Harden did to get from Houston to Brooklyn, because they wanted to trade him to Philly. And he said, no, I only want to go to Brooklyn. That is what has to happen based on what has happened over the last couple of years in the Celtics front office. That seems like a stretch real quick.
Well, keep in mind with James Harden that he had to keep opening up and expanding his list. And finally, Brooklyn put 8 first-round picks on the table and got that deal done and topped an offer that had Ben Simmons, who now couldn't get James Harden. With the Celtics, there's a world where Jaylen Brown and picks is the best offer the Wizards have for Bradley Beal, even without him demanding to take his talents to Boston. So we're going to see how that situation unfolds.
Well, I'm saying if they want to keep Tatum and Brown.
Yeah, they can't get him. Even then, Washington, if it's a trade, then it's just not going to go down that way. And so that's why it's interesting, because the Wizards, Tommy Shepard's going to talk to Bradley Beal in his camp this summer and see if they can work out an extension. So the question, if you're Washington, how comfortable are you going to the trade deadline with Bradley Beal on an expiring contract.
Historic announcement in the NFL. We'll get to that on the other side. This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Taking you up to the top of the hour here, it's Alex Barth and Bobby Kravitzky. Historic announcement in the NFL today. Raiders defensive lineman Carl Nassib on Instagram on a video said, quote, what's up, people? Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but finally feel comfortable getting it off my chest. He also made a $100,000 donation to the Trevor Project, which helps LGBT youth, at-risk youth. It's an organization that has and will continue to save lives. So first off, you know, Carl Nassib, happy that he feels comfortable. I'm very happy, and I don't think I'm alone in this, that he feels comfortable to share this. I hope he makes it to the season. He's a good player. He's a very good player. Can't imagine he's going anywhere, but you never know with injuries. I hope he makes it to the season. He actually does become the first active gay NFL player because Michael Sam was on a team, but he, you know, didn't make it to the regular season or whatever it was. There's a little bit of splitting hairs here between Nassib and Michael Sam, but that doesn't make it, you know, any less of a big moment. I just saw some people online struggling with the definition. Speaking of online, you might say looking in the comment section of some of those tweets is a mistake. You know, I looked at Schefter's, I looked at the NFL's, overwhelmingly positive. And that surprised me. It probably shouldn't. It surprised me. I was happy. And do we see a wave of this now? Is Nassib going to be, you know, the trailblazer where more guys are comfortable to come out? I saw somebody say something like, based on the national average, there should be about four or five gay players on every NFL team. Hopefully this leads to more guys coming out and playing professional football while being themselves.
Yeah, Michael Sam and Carl Nassib have helped to break down a barrier here. I think there are players who don't make it public, but the guys in the locker room know
that right.
He's gay. But now,
some guys have waited till retirement.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the fact that it's 2021 combined with a player coming out publicly is going to make it easier, at least I hope, for players who are gay to come forward and celebrate this and get to be their true, authentic selves with everyone rather than feeling like they have to keep that close to the vest.
Yeah, so, and again, good for Carl Nassib, the Raiders on Twitter saying they support him. We'll see what that means. You hope that, you know, the league does have a responsibility here to support him and make sure, because it's not going to be entirely easy. It's unfortunate. Shouldn't be. I mean, or like, it shouldn't not be easy, right? He should just be able to go play football and it is what it is, but, you know, you hope he gets the support of the league and his team, and those outfits now have a responsibility to make sure that this transition, I guess, is a transit, whatever it is, that you know, his new open status, I apologize if I'm not totally up on the terminology, but that this goes off and there's no problems with it, because that's what you need to keep people going.
We've seen how much of a PR game the NFL will play. They've done a 180 with their stance on Colin Kaepernick, for
yes.
example. So,
well, kind of. There's one more big thing they could do.
Yes,
but kinda.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yes. And so when it comes to Nassib, there's no reason, obviously, just like Kaepernick, there's no reason for them to take an opposing stance. That would be gross. And on top of it, I think they understand the PR perspective, and they should absolutely be trying to amplify his message and get it out there and promote it and make sure that people, especially, you know, kids of a certain age who are aware of their sexuality, that there's no reason to think that means you can't play football. That should be one of the messages that the NFL is trying to promote while supporting Carl Nassib.
So I'll throw this out. You know, I don't know if you have any more points on this. Just my last little anecdote on this. Because I was thinking about this a lot today, or after the news, I guess the last couple hours, because he announced it tonight. Glenn Burke, if you don't know who Glenn Burke is, Glenn Burke played for the Los Angeles Dodgers in the, I want to say, 70s? Yes, the Dodgers and the A's in the mid to late 70s. He is credited as inventing the high five along with Dusty Baker. It is the first recorded instance of a high five.
The high five was invented in the 70s?
Supposedly. There's a good, I don't know.
No one was high fiving before that?
I don't know if it's a 30 for 30. It's a mini document. There's a mini documentary on it. You look it up, Glenn Burke. Anyway, Glenn Burke was, he wasn't out, but his teammates knew, right, that he was gay, and he ultimately had trouble staying in baseball. He became a part of the gay rights movement in San Francisco later on, and had kind of a tough life a little bit after baseball, unfortunately, after he got sort of forced out of the game. So when, you know, whenever this topic comes up, right, you know, LGBT athletes, I always think, and there's a lot of trailblazers here, I always think of Glenn Burke because I saw that documentary. He just seemed like a genuinely good guy, fun guy who, you know, if it lived 20, 30 years later, might be somebody who is an international superstar. So if you get a chance today, tonight, tomorrow, look up Glenn Burke's story. Very interesting, interesting individual.
Yeah, it's just, it's heartbreaking that people have had to deal with that. And for so long, I mean, it never should have been the point at any juncture in time, but even for it to be so recent that now we are rightfully so celebrating Carl Nassib coming out and announcing his sexuality to the world. But at the same time, the fact that this is a big deal in 2021, it just speaks to how far behind we are on certain matters.
Right. I saw somebody say something like, you know, it's 2021. It shouldn't be a big deal. It shouldn't be. And hopefully we get to the point where it isn't a big deal. I think that's ultimately the goal. But I don't, you know, not in a disrespectful, we don't want to hear about it way, and just a, you know, this is what happens. It's normal. This is what goes on. So, yeah. So again, Carl Nassib, do you say congratulations again? I'm trying to learn the terminology.
Well, I would say we're hopeful for what this does for the future of the NFL as a more progressive league.
And I guess to, you know, we just as people, we thank him for just making life easier for those out there. So, interesting game going on right now in Omaha, Bobby. It is 1-0 in the top of the ninth. And so I had Vanderbilt as the, you know, bold take here, hot take alert, sound the siren. I had Vanderbilt as the favorite going in. I didn't watch a ton of NC State this year. They weren't on the radar. 36-18 is not a fantastic record for a College World Series team. Vanderbilt's in trouble and getting blanked. So if you don't follow college baseball, right, this is like Alabama getting to the national championship game and getting shut out. And not by Clemson. You know, not by a bad team, but not by Clemson. This is like if they got to the national championship, got shut out by, I don't know, like USC or something, right? So, because NC State's a pretty good baseball school. This is something here. This is, in terms of college baseball, this is a huge game.
Well, look, they're the fourth seed, and they're coming off a 7-6 win in extra innings against Arizona.
Yeah, that was a tough win, too.
Right, so they're starting to reach the point where they have to grind out victories. Even the one on Friday was 2-0 against the 12th seed, East Carolina.
And, I mean, so they two runs. They did score against Arizona, but none tonight. It's going to be a shame because Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter might be the best 1-2 punch in college baseball history, at least, you know, in the last 10, 20 years. And they're just not going to get any offense, and this is how it's going to end? Oh, that hurts.
We shall see. Maybe they come alive when their back's against the wall and they get the last ups. We shall see if they can respond.
So, again, if you can get to it, right, you know, turn it on. Keep us on. Keep us on the sound, but watch the game muted on ESPN. This is going to be something here down the stretch. We're kind of stretching here because we got like 2 minutes left in the segment. I don't want to get into anything deep. We do have one segment left. Bobby, anything else on the Celtics?
Oh, on the Celtics, a whole lot. I mean, I think we can.
Oh, wait. Yeah, it's over. It's over. NC State won. 1-0.
Yeah, so much for the bats coming alive in their last ups. So you hate to see it because, like you said, that's such an electric tandem on the mound with Rocker and Leiter. Now these guys are on to the draft. They've got some first-round picks in the lineup that obviously didn't come through for them tonight, but great players in their own right. And so that's part of the fun of these tournaments is the upsets and the chaos. And so you tip your cap to NC State. Their pitcher spun a gem.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I've already forgotten the kid's name after I was raving about
him. Farhill or something?
Farhill, something like that. But good for him, and hopefully, you know, there's scouts watching at the draft, so good for him. All right, we'll be back with a much more organized final segment of the show on the other side. We'll get into some more NBA takes, maybe a little hockey as well. Keep it here. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're
listening to The Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Final full segment of The Diehards. Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. So I was trying to think of it last segment. Rocker and lighter is the best 1-2 punch in the history of college baseball. You got to go back 2006 UNC. Daniel Bard, Andrew Miller, both certainly had fascinating major league careers. I think Bard's still going. I think Miller's still going.
Bard is actually still pitching well as a reliever.
He just won comeback player of the year. Yeah. After pitching well as a reliever now after like 10 years out. But and actually, Bobby, you brought up an interesting point. We can get into this a little bit. So Vanderbilt, it's double elimination. So Vanderbilt now has to play Stanford on Wednesday. They need to win that to advance. The winner of that game, let's say Vanderbilt wins, they would get NC State on Friday, and they need to beat NC State twice. NC State only needs to win one because it's double elimination. But if Vanderbilt beats them, there'd be another game on Saturday. So you have Kumar Rocker pitched on Saturday. Leiter pitched on Monday. You now need to fill games Wednesday, then potentially Friday and Saturday. And you have these two kids who both have a chance to go top four in the draft. This is going to be very interesting how they manage this.
Yeah, so even if they're willing to go on 4 days rest, which with their draft stock, maybe they're not, and more power to them.
Well, let's emphasize, too, they both threw a lot of pitches.
Yes.
They both threw over 100 pitches in their respective appearances.
Right, and so that is all the more reason for them to be justified in saying, I'm just not risking my arm at this point. So even if they're willing to go, then Leiter isn't going to throw on Wednesday, or Rocker, excuse me, Wednesday and Saturday on 3 days.
It's
at that
point. Saturday game that gets tough, yeah.
At some point, they're going to be without one of those two, and that's provided that they at least win on Wednesday. So we shall see what they do on the mound.
And they don't have a game to throw away. They don't have a game where it's like, you know, so, and look, it's Vanderbilt baseball. This is, you know, like saying Alabama football. Well, wide receiver A and wide receiver B can't go. They're not screwed. The next five wide receivers are probably, you know, among the top 20 in the country. But there's this, when you go from Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker, even if the next guy's incredibly good, it's a significant step down.
Yeah, like we said, this is a historically good tandem. So number three can be fantastic in his own right, but there's a reason we're talking about a duo, not a trio. So that kid is going to have to step up.
Well, college baseball is often built, the way these teams are built, the way it works is you'll throw, you know, Friday and Saturday, those are the spots you want if you're a starting pitcher. That's like the honor. And then Sunday and the weekday starts will rotate. I might as well pull this up here, right, if we're going to talk about it. So Leiter and Rocker have started, I don't want to do math on air. What's 18 plus 16?
18 plus 16 is 34.
So they've made 34 of the 61 starts for Vanderbilt this year. So just over half. So there are other options. Thomas Schultz has 9 starts. He's tied for the next
have
most.
Have you ever heard of Thomas Schultz?
I have not.
So four
and I follow college baseball a little bit. 4-2 with the 4.19 ERA. He does have a 2.08 opposing batting average. Or Christian Little, who's 3-1 with a 5.02, 2.36 opponents against him.
Which one of them is getting the ball? Should they?
Tom, you're going with Thomas Schultz?
Yeah. Should they reach that point? Because they have to win on Wednesday,
right,
and then we'll see what Leiter wants to do Friday.
Well, although, hang on. Patrick Riley started 7. And so after these guys, nobody started more than 1. 4-2 and 7 starts, 4.89. Opponents hitting 192 against him.
And then the other thing we saw, the bats need to step up.
Credit. Yes. I mean, that ultimately is what it comes down to.
Yeah. Credit to this pitcher. I can't remember his name either right
Little
now.
Little something.
We forgot it last
week. We were not planning on doing a college baseball segment.
Phil,
the show has gotten
like
away
that.
From us. Yeah.
I got it right here. Sam Highfill.
There you
so
go.
So shout out to him for spinning a gem. But where were the bats tonight? Leiter threw a beauty as well. And Vanderbilt, they lost it because the offense wasn't able to step up. And so that can't be the case moving forward, or their season's coming to an end.
And again, this is pretty big. You know, one of the best starting combos college baseball seen in a long time.
A lineup that's got first round picks.
Complete blue blood program. And NC State's not a nobody. Far from it. Far from it. NC State's, you know, the Carolinas are a baseball hotbed, but NC State ain't Vanderbilt.
No, this was Vanderbilt's first shutout of the season. It's the first time they got shut
right,
out all season.
Right, so it's going to be – I love the – oh, and by the way, so if they get through all that, right, so they have to win Wednesday, they have to win Friday and Saturday. If they get through all that, then they play the winner of bracket two in a best of three that starts a week from Monday. So they're going to need other pitchers. They are desperately going to need other pitchers.
Well, Schultz sounds like he's good, so it's just a question of do those guys plus the bats step up to help carry the load?
You're right. They're going to need to score runs. That was, you know, who one of their best offensive players is?
No.
A guy named Isaiah Thomas.
There we go. And the guy who hit the home run tonight, last name Tatum.
So that's a perfect transition back. I kind of want to, you know, bring everything we talked about basketball wise in the show tonight into one point. If you could be one of the two franchises right now, two teams that have inexplicably choked, who have failed to meet high expectations, who are supposed to at this point, after very focused rebuilds, be back on top of the NBA mountain. They haven't done that. If you could be one of the two franchises, the Boston Celtics or the Philadelphia 76ers, who would you rather be? Who's in a better position moving forward?
I think it's the Celtics, and that across the board, they went out. So let's start with Tatum and Embiid. Now, Embiid is a monster. He was the runner-up for MVP this year, but he's got concerns about injuries and conditioning. So how long can he be the franchise centerpiece of a title contender? Massive concern.
So here is my one counter to that. Yes, Embiid has concerns about injuries. Tatum has concerns about commitment. What's more likely to happen in the next 2 years? Tatum leaves Boston or Embiid leaves Philly?
That's fair. Embiid is Philly. He's just not going to reach a point where he asks out of there. That's fair. But I would say the Tatum situation is fluid. So right now, if his contract was up, I would put my money on him leaving unless they can get Bradley Beal, for instance.
Yeah.
But luckily for the Celtics, they do have some time on their side. I think if you want to call those a wash, that's reasonable. But we talked to Noah Levick. They just brought Doc Rivers in. Once again, a failure to make in-game adjustments helps spell doom for his team despite being on the verge of closing out a series. So they're rolling with Doc Rivers for at least another season.
Yep.
Whereas the Celtics, the search is open. It's arguably, and in my opinion, the most attractive one on the market right now. If you're someone like Rick Carlisle and the Bucks job becomes available, that's a great situation. Maybe it's more attractive to a veteran coach looking to win now, understandable. But the Celtics job is right up there in terms of appeal and cachet and all that. And so I look at the Celtics and say they've got Brown and Tatum. They're both under contract long term. Yes, we know that situation can change in a hurry. But they're on the road now after this Kemba trade to being able to create max cap space next summer when Bradley Beal may reach free agency, depending on how this situation with him and the Wizards unfolds. We know that Tommy Shepard is going to talk to his camp this offseason. So all of a sudden, the Celtics, out of this shakeup, which parallels Philly as it tends to have gone this way the last few seasons, it's they're now the franchise that needed a shakeup to reinvigorate everyone, and it seems like they're getting it. And the Sixers, it seemed like that helped to boost them during the regular season, and then all the ills that were always there came home to roost in the playoffs, and you're running out of ways to reconfigure it because Ben Simmons' trade value is at its lowest. You don't have cap space. You don't have enticing draft picks. You're not known for getting premier free agents. So I think that Philly is in a precarious situation, whereas the Celtics, you're starting to see the promise of having a cleaner slate.
How close is that gap?
Oh, it's close. I mean, if Joel Embiid comes into next season in the best shape of his life and the return for Ben Simmons helps produce an optimal fit around Embiid, then Philly is going to remain a title contender as long as they're healthy. So it's close. I don't know if the Celtics can climb to that level next season. It's possible. We're seeing the way the game is going, where it's driven by wing dominance and skill players. And the Celtics, between Tatum, Brown, Marcus Smart, and presumably they'll re-sign Evan Fournier, they've got a good group of players. Maybe they climb that high. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're better than the Sixers next season. So it's certainly close. I just think that the Celtics have more going for them right now than the Sixers do.
So you brought up something interesting. Is Evan Fournier the way to go? And I'm not saying Evan Fournier is a bad player. He's not bad. They do need a shooter. But you look at their limited resources, and I'll say it, the Celtics have limited resources right now. They made that trade with Kemba Walker, and they've opened up resources down the road. This offseason, Well, not so much.
Some financial flexibility to help re-sign Fournier.
But if they come back, and I know there's a long way to go, and I'm a huge Marcus Smart guy, by the way. Let me preface this by saying I'm a huge Marcus Smart guy. I think he's underrated. I think if there were, the NBA would be, but the more Marcus Smart's in the NBA, the better the league would be. If they come back in their front court, is Marcus Smart and Evan Fournier?
Well, so I think that's,
I
think that's zooming in too far, where their starting lineup, in my opinion, some people have thrown out the notion that they'll start Al Horford and Robert Williams at times, I suppose. But with the way the league's going, I think most often, and most importantly, the closing lineup is going to have one of those two. So we're talking about Marcus Smart, Evan Fournier, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Al Horford or Robert Williams.
And or Moses Brown.
To me, that's a really good starting lineup that all of a sudden the ball movement should be better. You add in the fact that Evan Fournier is third to fourth on that depth chart from perimeter attack. So I really like what the Celtics have in that group. For example, we're seeing the Clippers get to the Western Conference Finals on the back of a small ball unit with a wing playing the five. And Boston now can throw out a group with a traditional center who has the versatility to play that position in the postseason, combined with four guys who could all qualify as wings and ball handlers.
I just don't know. They have the money. They freed up money so they can re-sign Evan Fournier. Is there no way they can redirect that money to get a better shooting guard?
Not really. Even they're limited in the fact that, not to get too far into the nerddom of the cap, yeah, but if they do a sign and trade, they're hard capped. It limits how they can build the roster. It's a whole thing. So Evan Fournier re-signing, it makes the most sense. It's genuinely what they want to do, and they'll look to utilize the trade exception that they have left from the Hayward deal that he burned most of, and the mid-level exception to find two other players to help the rotation. Because trading Kemba, say what you want about the season he just had, he averaged 19 points per game. So they don't need to just redistribute their scoring. They need to add to it. They were middle of the pack in points per game. They need to get better in that regard.
That's why I'm saying I just don't know. And look, if they're financially handicapped, they're financially handicapped. But I think in the NBA, you can move the salary cap around and make it dance how you want it to dance.
This is not the NFL. There's no such thing as an
albatross. It's not hockey either.
There's no such thing as an albatross, but at the same time, if you're up against the cap like Philadelphia, you better have deals that you can move to get better, or you've got to attach picks like the Celtics just did with Kemba.
I don't know that you said they need that scoring. Is Evan Fournier going to be – they need a 20-point-per-game scorer. Is Evan Fournier going to be that guy in this offense without taking up too many shots?
See, I don't think they need a 20-point-per-game score. I think – and Fournier looked pretty well when he was in the lineup for them. So I think what they need is an expected increase, even if it's small, from Tatum and Brown. And there's a concern, at least in the beginning, that Brown's offseason is compromised by his hand injury.
Right. You may not have him for the first month of the season.
Right. But I think – obviously, it's far more about the playoffs than the regular season. So long term, they're hoping that he can at least use the regular season as a developing ground. So the hope is for a little more scoring from those two, perhaps a small boost from Marcus Smart, having Fournier for the whole season. And then, like I said, you've got to find scoring off the bench. And even Aaron Nesmith can help to some extent in that capacity.
We've got one segment left here on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Closing out the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network, Alex Barth and Bobby Kravitsky with you. Bobby, anything we didn't get to tonight you wanted to talk about?
Well, Jacob deGrom making history to this point in the season. So a 7.24 ERA plus this season.
Ew.
The best ever through 11
starts. Ew, analytics. Ew, well, stop.
12 straight starts with one or no runs earned, Alex. On top of that, he hasn't allowed a run in his last 30 innings pitched.
Those numbers I can swallow. He's very good. Look at the pitching the Mets have had, right, between him, Syndergaard, Matt Harvey, Steven Matz.
Bartolo Colon.
Well, no, just in the last, like, 5 or 6 years, and not all these guys are still good, but Harvey, did he win a Cy Younger? Got close. Matz was excellent for a period there, and they have what to show for it. They made one World Series run, and they've been widely irrelevant since. Very glad I'm not a fan of that team. No, I can't imagine.
They had a scandal with ownership.
Multiple scandals.
Yes, that's true. the bats haven't been there. There's injuries to these starters because Tommy John's so common now. And so, yeah, it's just a franchise that on one hand has had so much from a pitching perspective, and on the other, you're wondering, is it ever going to come together, even now with Stephen Cohen and his endless pockets?
It's the kind of thing where, like, it would be cool to see the Mets win if they weren't from New York, I guess, if that makes sense. But the ton of talent, and the injuries are a big thing. I mean, you go back to David Wright. Stephen Wright was
both
the
got
Red
injured,
Sox
though.
Stephen Wright did get injured in one of the most bizarre.
It started with the decision. Does that look like the guy you want on the base?
They use a pitcher as a pinch runner, but he's trying to actually. So he's out in Hawaii trying to get back into shape. He's trying to come back now at like 36.
He's a knuckleballer. He could probably do it.
I'd love to. I was a big fan of his. I would enjoy that. But yeah, the Mets have, you know, as good as this guy is, this just illustrates how bad the Mets' organizational luck is, that they can have this guy, they can have Syndergaard, and they still can't win. The Diehards will be back tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Eastern. Pepe in the house. Bobby, you are back on Thursday,
correct,
right? I will be back with Bobby next Monday. Until then, have a good night. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Keep it here on the Sports Map Radio Network.